So the cosmological constant problem is can be thought as a clash between classical general relativity and quantum field theory, in the sense that in an effective field theory, you can, for example, estimate the vacuum energy. And this is something which is, in principle, calculable under some assumptions. And the problem is that in the four-dimensional GR, the vacuum energy couples to gravity the same way as a cosmological constant. And then you can formulate the cosmological constant problem as a question: how can a large vacuum energy be compatible with this small observed curvature of space-time? And here, large vacuum energy, I don't mean a large order Planck scale, but a large vacuum energy could be even enough to be of the order of the electron mass. That would be already too large compared to observation. So if you imagine that you integrate out all the fields below the electron, then you have to explain why the contribution to the vacuum energy from the electron doesn't overcurve space-time with respect to what we see. So in this context, what I would call a self-tuning mechanism is any mechanism which allows to disconnect the space-time curvature from the vacuum energy. In other words, a mechanism which allows flat space-time to be a solution for generic values of EVAC. Okay? So in this talk, I will present such a mechanism in a framework which arises in the context of theories of gravity in extra dimensions. In particular, as we will see, the self-tuning mechanism is possible in a dilatonic asymmetric brain world, and I will explain what that is, with general two-derivative induced terms. So the picture that we have in mind is something like this. We have an extra dimension, we have a bulk geometry, we have a four-dimensional hypersurface where we are living in, and this hypersurface connects two different sides of this bulk geometry. And the model, although it doesn't need to be, it is most usefully interpreted in terms of holography, in terms of the ADS-CFT correspondence. And in fact, it could be recast in terms of a purely four-dimensional dual field theory, which is strongly coupled and non-gravitational. So this would be, if you want, a model in which you have gravity as emergent from a fundamentally quantum field theoretic framework. And although you don't need to think about it this way, it is useful to think about it this way because holography gives a guideline for consistency of the model and a way to sort out some problems that were encountered in similar models that people have studied before. So this is not the first time this has been attempted, but around 2000, when theories of extra dimensions were very popular, people have already looked at something like this. But there were always some obstacles in having a phenomenologically viable model of this sort. And as we found out, in fact, setting up the problem in a holographic framework helps resolve some of these problems that people encountered. So the outline of this talk, I will describe the setup. Then I will talk about the vacuum solution, so in particular, how the self-tuning mechanisms work. And I will move on and describe something about the time-dependent solutions which are necessary to study the cosmology of this model, so where we made some progress in the recent past. So this is the model, so I'm just fleshing it out. I will explain it a bit better in the following. So this is the action. The action is a five-dimensional theory. It's composed of two terms. So there is a five-dimensional action. This describes gravity plus a scalar field with some potential, and this is just a five-dimensional GR minimally coupled to a scalar field, and this is the part of the action which controls the bulk geometry. So this direction is the extra dimension, and the two sides here will be solutions of the equations of motion derived from this action. The potential, I'm keeping it general for now, and it has to have some features which I will specify later. And then on top of that, we include a defect, this sigma zero, this brain, and there is a part of the action which is localized on the brain. And this contains another potential term for the scalar plus induced kinetic terms for both the scalar and the metric. Okay? And notice is that the combination, in fact, is the most general two-derivative action that you can write, which has this field content and which contains a defect. There are no other terms that you can write which respects four-dimensional covariant and have two derivatives. Okay, so this is quite general. And this function, d, w, z, and u, they will ultimately specify the model, but I'm keeping them So whatever I'm going to say, it's fairly general. You don't need to know the details of this function to essentially draw any conclusions. Okay. So please stop me if you have any questions at any time. Yes.
In the first line, the coordinate x the same?
Not necessarily. So x here is a coordinate in the bulk. Sigma here are coordinates which are volume coordinates of the metric of the on the brain. And then you can go into a gauge when they're the same, or you can keep them different. That depends on... Essentially, we'll see that, for example, when you do cosmology, they're not necessarily useful. It's not necessarily useful to have, say, bulk time to be the same as brain time, because you may want to go to proper time, for example. So. Yeah, so this is completely covariant in four-dimensional coordinates on the brain and on five-dimensional everywhere else in the body. It's a basically a coordinate choice. Any other questions? Okay, so these are the kinds of solutions that we're interested in. It's a codimension one problem, so the brain will separate two different bulk geometries. And as I said, the holographic dual interpretation of this model is that you can see it as a strongly interacting large rank UFT, which is dual to the bulk theory, coupled to a weakly interacting four-dimensional theory which is stuck on the brain. And in fact, you can interpret this, you can see this induced terms as arising from the from the quantum effects which couple the lower dimensional fields to the strongly coupled field theory. And when you integrate these weakly coupled fields out, then you will be left with some effective interactions which generically take this form. So this has to be interpreted as an effective field theory valid below some large cutoff, which is essentially the cutoff where this where you give the elementary couplings of the four-dimensional fields to the higher dimensional fields. But below this cutoff, you can sort of interpret it. You can use this theory. So, in order to find the solutions, you have to write the field equations. So the bulk field equations are just Einstein's equation with this field content and this potential. So this is, there's nothing particularly exotic there. On top of that, the shape of the brain and its position are determined by the junction conditions across the defect. And these junction conditions are given by Israel. So they tell you that the metric and scale, the induced metric and the scalar field, they have to be continuous across the defect. And their first derivatives, or some covariant versions of the first derivatives, have to be, they can be discontinuous, and their discontinuity is determined by the specific form of the action which is present on the brain. And what does self-tuning, as I defined it at the beginning, means? Self-tuning means that there exist solutions in which the defect is flat, no matter what these functions are, in particular, no matter what this WB is. So notice that this WB can be seen as a cosmological term at any given value of the scalar field, for example. This receives contribution from the vacuum energy of whatever theory is living on the brain. So the vacuum energy is hidden in here. Okay.
But
so
it's also in V, right?
Well, that's a five-dimensional cosmological constant, but yeah, sure. But if your matter, your subtle matter is localized on the brain, it will not contribute to this guy. It will only contribute to this
but
guy.
Phi would have quantum...
phi, yes, very good. So the five-dimensional theory is, if you believe in a larger holography, it's supposed to be treated classically. Because in the larger limit, essentially, this is not on the same footing as a quantum field theory in flat space or in curved space even. But this five-dimensional theory is supposed to be... viewed as a classical theory in the larger limit, because this is larger limit quantum corrections are suppressed. So essentially, you are supposed to ignore all the quantum effects, all the quantum gravity effects that are coming from the bulk.
Okay.
So this is one of the paradigms of holography. Whenever you...
Because they're suppressed by large.
Yeah, they're suppressed by large. So the four-dimensional theory dual to this is a large n theory, and in the limit of infinite n, in fact, any quantum suppression is appropriate. On the other hand, the four-dimensional theory is weakly coupled, and therefore it's a quantum field theory, so it would produce the usual quantum corrections, including a vacuum energy. Okay? Good. So, okay, so the kind of geometry, the kind of solution for the bulk, they typically look like this. So I'm looking for flat four-dimensional geometries. And any such solution can be cast in this form by a coordinate transformation. So you see this is Poincaré invariant in the four dimensions. And then it's specified by two functions, one of the scale factor And the other is a scalar field profile as a function of this coordinate u, which parameterizes the extra dimension. So this typically, sometimes it's called an ABS soliton, sometimes it's called a holographic RG flow. It's the same thing. It's basically a solution in which the scalar field interpolates between some value which takes it in the large regional, large volume region of the geometry, and then it changes, and then it interpolates to some other value, which may be finite or infinite. And in doing so, the scalar field backreacts and changes the curvature of the metric. Without the, with the constant scalar field, you typically will have just empty de Sitter space in the bulk. Okay? So the goal is essentially to take two of these geometries and to glue them together across the brain in such a way that Israel's junction conditions are satisfied. And in particular, we choose to do them by gluing a two different regions. One is a large volume region, which eventually will connect to an ADS boundary. And the other is what we call the interior region, which is a small volume region, which doesn't connect to any ADS boundary. And therefore, you have to basically give the scale factor and the scalar field profile for both solutions. So there will be two sets of such things. And we call the large volume region the UV geometry, which, because it's dual in the holographic language, is dual to the UV of the dual field theory. And the same way, in the same way, the interior region is called, I will call it the IR geometry. And in particular, they can be uniquely characterized by the fact that in the large volume region, eventually the scale factor diverges, and in the small volume region, eventually the scale factor goes to zero. And in five dimensions, basically you cannot avoid, in particular, this thing. The scale factor will always go to zero in the infrared. Okay?
So, question. Yeah. Can you use Z2 boundary condition, or what happened?
Z2, yeah, no. Very good. So if you use Z2 boundary condition, the self-tuning doesn't work. So this is explicitly not Z2 invariant across the brain. This is why I'm gluing two completely different geometries on both sides. I will tell you, well, what happens if you use the Z2, but I hope it will be clear in a second. Okay, so this is a bit technical, but for it is convenient in order to describe these bulk solutions, these sort of holographic RG flow solutions, to introduce an auxiliary function, which is called W phi, which is called a superpotential. And the reason is that this superpotential completely characterizes the type of geometry. So this is a function such that, in terms of this function, the Einstein's field equations become first-order flow equations in the bulk. So a first-order flow from the metric and a first-order flow from the scalar field. And the scalar field, the scalar function W only has to satisfy this first-order nonlinear equation, which is completely specified by the bulk potential V. Okay? So the idea is that the moment you choose the solutions for this W, then essentially up to some constant, some trivial integration constants, then the geometry is specified by solving these first order flow equations. So the hard part of Einstein's equation is solving this one. Okay. So in particular, so this is a sketch, a cartoon of what happens to W as a function of the scalar field phi. So now this axis is a scalar field. So you have to solve twice for W, one in the UV and one in the IR, and there would be some value of the scalar field takes on the brain, which is this green line. So essentially, there are three things that you can choose. There's a solution of W in the UV, there's a solution for W in the IR. Notice that the equation for W is first order, so there's a one-parameter family of solutions. And in fact, there are infinitely many solutions on both sides, and also you have to choose where to put the brain, okay, in at least in field space. So what happens is that these two sides are actually quite different. It turns out that in the UV side of the geometry, so in the large volume region of the geometry, all solutions of these equations, or at least there is an infinite, a continuous family of solutions, which all flow to the same point. So they all satisfy the right ADS UV boundary condition. So the space is ADS close to the origin here, no matter which of these blue solutions you take. On the other hand, if you go to the IR side, then these solutions are very different from each other, and depending on what you choose, you can get very different things. So there's no attractor on this side. Okay. So as I said, all the UV solutions go to the same. On the IR, on the other hand, so this is where one place is where holography actually plays a role, because what we learned from ADS-CFT is that you cannot have any generic solution in the interior space-time, but you have to impose some regularity conditions. So in other words, you have to have either a regular solution, for example, the space-time can asymptote to another ADS region, or you can have some mild singularity, and the kind of singularities that you can accept is something that have been studied in holography. So we know which kind of singularities are good or bad. But whatever whatever option you choose, either a regular solution or a mild singularity, it turns out that in the interior region, there is at most one solution for W which respects this regularity condition. So in other words, once you specify the potential, then you have no choice but to take only one specific solution in the infrared part of the geometry. Okay.
You don't want to have a black hole inside?
So there is no black hole. These are Poincaré invariant solutions. So black holes, I'm not considering them here.
The black hole in the extra dimension.
It cannot be a black hole, right? Wow. Because time and space have the same scale factor. So there is no blackening function. So if you want to relax Poincaré, so let me rewrite the metric here again. So the metric in the bulk.
Oh,
that's okay. So the metric in the bulk is this, and then there is this thing, dx mu dx mu. So in order to have a black hole, you have to sort of split space and time here. So this is not a black hole geometry.
No, but a black hole in the bulk with the...
So if you wanted a black hole in the bulk, then you have to write something like this. Dt, and then some other thing, dx. So this will break Poincaré invariance. This will leave only rotational invariance. So I'm looking for the Poincaré invariant vacuum. So I'm sort of not looking at black holes.
I'm a bit confused because, I mean, I can imagine if I have a membrane around a black hole, then I can...
These are flat sort of slices.
But
you can look at solutions of that sort. So this is a different, a more general ansatz. But it's not what I'm looking at here. So this would be not the vacuum. It would be some kind of thermally excited state, for example, above the vacuum. So... So you can look at them, but they are sort of... Okay, so as I said, in the infrared, essentially, there's only one solution that you can choose. On the other hand, in the UV, these blue solutions, it doesn't matter which one you choose, it's always okay. And then, once you choose this one and you impose Israel's junction condition, something magical happens. So it turns out that Israel's junction conditions, they completely fix both the position of the brain and the UV solution. So once you specify your theory, namely your bulk potential, essentially, and you specify your Poincaré invariant ansatz this way, essentially you find just a single solution, and generically there will be a solution which has a flat brain somewhere and with a unique geometry both in the IR and in the UV. And this happens for generic values of the function, for generic choices of the functions that you put on the brain, and in particular it happens for generic values of the brain vacuum energy. So this is exactly the kind of self-tuning mechanism that I was advocating. In other words, no matter what kind of function you put on the brain, you always find a solution of this form in which the geometry on the brain, perceived on the brain, is flat. Okay. Okay. Good. So now you have your Poincaré invariant vacuum. Now you have to ask the following question. So this is a higher-dimensional model. Does it propagate four-dimensional gravity that we observe? No, we know that this is something non-trivial in theories of higher dimensions. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. And this is what I'm going to discuss briefly now. So at first sight, you may think, okay, this model will never propagate four-dimensional gravity because, in fact, the transverse volume of the holographic dimension is infinite in the UV. So in other words, this makes the zero-mode graviton, the zero mode of the graviton, the guy that doesn't depend at all on the extra dimension, to be non-normalizable. Okay? Now, this is the mode that, for example, in Randall-Sundrum models propagates four-dimensional massless gravity. And this mode is absent here because it's projected out of the spectrum. It's not normalizable. However, there is another ingredient which I included in the model, which makes the possibility of having four-dimensional gravitational interactions possible. And this is this induced term on the brain. So this function, there was a function u that multiplies the four-dimensional Ricci scalar of the Einstein term of the induced metric. And so if you just look at the gravitational part of the action, there is a five-dimensional Einstein term, there is a four-dimensional Einstein term, and this is precisely the setup that long ago Dvalli, Gabalazzi, Porati showed that can propagate four-dimensional gravity, not just as a single exact mode, but as a long-lived resonance. And in fact, this is precisely what happens here. So in some regimes, in some distance scales, this term produces a long-lived resonance on the brain, which acts as if it were a four-dimensional graviton. Now, it turns out that the fact that the bulk is curved with respect to the original DGP story makes a difference. And the difference is that the bulk curvature essentially tells you that if you go to very, very large distances, this four-dimensional resonance becomes massive. Okay? So at very, very ultimate infrared, you get actually massive gravity on the brain. Okay? So in particular, there are two length scales that you have to consider. One is this DGP transition length, which is proportional to this function u evaluated at phi zero. Phi zero is the position of the brain. And the other is the bulk curvature length, which is essentially set by the value of the superpotential in the bulk. And then you can have two possibilities. So depending on the hierarchy between this length scale, you have different phenomenology. So if the curvature length scale is larger than the DGP transition scale, then so what happens is depicted in this picture. So this axis now is momentum. So short distance is on the right, large momentum, and large distance, small momentum is on the left. So if you start from short distances, at short distances, gravity looks massless, looks four-dimensional and massless. And then, like in the DGP model, when you transition, when you cross this DGP transition scale, you end up in a five-dimensional regime. So for example, instead of having a 1 over r potential, you get 1 over r squared potential for the gravitational, for Newton's law. And then when you cross again this other scale, the curvature scale, you transition again into a four-dimensional regime, but where now the graviton is massive. On the other hand, you can have this hierarchy inverted. You can have the curvature length scale less than the DGP length scale. And in that case, it turns out that the exchange is always looks like four-dimensional. So you transition between a massless exchange, and then when you cross this curvature scale, you get a massive exchange. Okay? So the phenomenology is interesting. And what is important is also to set what are the effective four-dimensional couplings and length scales which govern the problem. For example, the Planck scale and the mass of the graviton. And these are determined by two different combinations of the fundamental ingredients. So the M here is the five-dimensional Planck scale. MP is the four-dimensional Planck scale. So they're connected by this U0, this U evaluated at phi zero. In the same way, the mass of the graviton is given by this ratio. And again, since this happens generically, there is enough wiggle room to have, for example, the mass of the graviton much, much, much smaller than the Planck scale, and, well, to have some interesting phenomenology at the distance scale we observe. Okay, so this sort of ends the story about the vacuum solution. Now I'm going to go to cosmology. Yes?
Can I ask a question about sure. When you were finding the solutions before, you were looking for these Poincaré invariant solutions,
yeah.
And then the solution you found ended up having, if I understand correctly, the four geometry of the brain being flat.
Yeah.
Is that consequence of the assumption that it was Poincaré?
Good. Yes. Poincaré? Yes. So I'm explicitly looking for those solutions. So I'm not saying that this is either the only solution or the preferred solution. So already it's something that. So, for example, I haven't asked the question about the dynamics, whether, for example, if you start in a generic state, then whether you end up here. But already the fact that there are such solutions with generic vacuum energy and flat geometry, it's already a huge improvement over the normal thing in four dimensions. When the moment you put a vacuum energy, there is no flat geometry whatsoever as a solution, right? So now the question becomes a dynamical one. Okay, we know that such a solution exists. I can call it the vacuum because it's Poincaré invariant. Now the question is, are there other vacua with different geometries? Or for example, in a time-dependent setup, do I end up close to this vacuum? And things like that. One thing which became clear to us recently is that, for example, if you try to look for solutions with a curved brain, with a, for example, De Sitter brain, with the same boundary conditions as for the vacuum, which in other words, in such a way that the boundary, the asymptotic part of the geometry is unchanged, then there is no such solution. So for example, if you want a De Sitter brain, what you have to do is you have to put your dual quantum field theory itself on a curved space. So it becomes a method of a super selection rule, if you want a method of boundary conditions. essentially the geometry of the brain resembles whatever geometry the dual quantum field theory you put on, and remember that in the dual quantum field theory, in the dual language, gravity is not dynamical. So the geometry that you put the quantum field theory on, it's a matter of choice. It's a choice of your sources in your theory. Okay. So if you think that your fundamental CFT lives on a flat space, then at this level for the vacuum, these are all the solutions that you're going to get. Okay. Then you can ask a different question, which is what I'm going to ask the following now, which is, suppose you don't want to describe the vacuum, but you want to describe some excited state above the vacuum, for example, a time-dependent state. Now, then this is a different story, but this is becoming the realm of cosmology. So you start moving your fields, you get a time-dependent solution, and then the geometry of the brain could be different, but this as different as it is when you do cosmology in normal four dimensions. You put some matter, you give some time-dependent, some non-vacuum initial condition, the system will evolve. So this is what I'm going to do now. So now suppose you want to describe the cosmology, then you have to include time dependence, okay? And time dependence you can put, if you want to describe a homogeneous and isotropic universe, you can still keep the isotropy and the rotational invariance and homogeneity. So the most general solution that you can write, now it's more complicated, looks like this. It has three functions in the metric. So now I'm calling the holographic, the extra coordinate Z. It has one function for the scalar field, and then also you have to specify what is the brain position as a function of time, okay? Now again, this is not the minimal way to write the solution. For example, there is still some gauge dependence here. You can choose some of these functions B, N, and A by making some coordinate transformations. But whatever you do, the induced metric on the brain in such a setup will always, after you go to proper time, take the form of an effective FRW universe, okay, with a scale factor a square of tau, where tau is proper time. And here, again, I stress that I want to find such solutions by requiring the boundary conditions on the metric functions to be the same that I was imposing on the vacuum. In other words, I want the solution in the large volume region to go to be asymptotically ADS space-time without time-dependent sources. I don't want to make a time-dependent solution just by, you know, including some time-dependent sources just to perturb my system, right? So this should be a solution of the same theory of which I started with in the same class of theory of solutions which, it's a solution in the same class where I found the vacuum state, for example. Okay, so it's an excited state on top of the vacuum that I presented before. Okay. So again, as I said, there is a complementary approach in which you do introduce sources on the boundary, and then you can get different geometries from the brain. And this was explored with Joel Gosch and our postdoc Lukas Witkowski in this paper in particular. But this I won't talk about here. Okay, so now if you write Einstein's equations and the junction conditions for these ansatz, then you get a horrible system. And it's very complicated. So to get a first glimpse of what kind of cosmology you can have, then what we did is we made a simplification. We looked at the pro-brain approximation. So the pro-brain approximation means that the bulk is the same as the static vacuum. So I didn't change my ansatz in the bulk, but the brain position is time dependent. Okay, so this is enough to generate time dependency to generate an FRW cosmology. Only here you basically have a brain that doesn't back react on the bulk, so the bulk geometry is essentially continuous, and the brain moves around in this as a probe in this geometry. Now, if you do that, then the induced metric on the brain takes this form, and after you go to proper time, you see that the effective scale factor on the brain is completely determined by the bulk scale factor, A of u, plus the brain trajectory. So if you know A of u and you know the brain trajectory, then you can compute everything. And the nice thing about this is that once you specify the scale factor, the bulk scale factor, then the equation for the brain trajectory is exactly soluble. It's essentially you have one integration to do. Okay? Now the con is of course that this is not generic. So I started with the generic theory. Now in order to be able to use the pro-brain approximation, then the theory stops being generic because in particular I want the energy density on the brain to be much smaller in general than the curvature scale in the bulk. And this essentially sort of eliminates the genericity in my theory. But okay, one can hope that the classes of cohomologies that you get there will survive even when you relax this probrain approximation, but here it's particularly tractable, so we look at this system first. Okay? Okay, so first, the first qualitative thing to say is that, again, this is the induced metric. So since the scale factor, the bulk scale factor is monotonic and it grows from the infrared to the UV, then you can have an expanding or a contracting cosmology depending just on the direction where the brain goes. So if the direction goes towards the UV, the large volume region, then the volume on the effective volume on the brain increases, and this is an expanding cosmology. On the other hand, if the brain is falling towards the interior, then the effective volume is decreasing, and this is contracting cosmology. This is a sort of the zeroth order description of the cosmological evolution. Now, to get things a bit more quantitative, you can write the effective action for this brain trajectory U of t, which is your only unknown. And it turns out that these equations are the trajectory of the brain is effectively described by a classical Lagrangian system, which has one integral of the motion, which you can call the energy. And once you fix the energy, the system becomes first order, and you can solve it. You can solve it by integration. So in particular, the energy is given by this combination. So this is a bit complicated. So the most important thing is this variable y. Y essentially is a sort of a relativistic version of the kinetic energy of the brain. So it depends only on the time, proper time derivative of u. Okay, and it enters here polynomially in terms. It's basically e is a cubic polynomial in this y. And everything else is non-polynomial, but only depends on u and not on u dot. Okay? So this f, this wb is, remember, this is one of the functions which characterize the brain action, is the induced cosmological term. And this f is a combination of also of the brain functions and of w, of the bulk superpotential. Doesn't matter. I mean, this is a complicated combination. The only important thing is that it only depends on the bulk solution and on u and not u dot. Okay. So what you can do, you can look at this equation as a cubic equation in y. You can solve it, and the solution will be some function y of u, and then you're one integration away to find the trajectory, because you can solve, you can express du d tau as a function of y, and essentially you have to just integrate this. So the upshot is that once the bulk geometry is fixed, and once you choose the integration constant which defines the energy surface, essentially you can integrate exactly and find u of tau. And these two signs correspond precisely to the contracting and expanding solutions that that I was discussing before. Okay, so each solution, each value of e corresponds to a contracting universe and an expanding universe, precisely as in classical mechanics you can send a particle with the same energy to the left or to the right. Okay, so what kind of cosmology do you get when you go through this? So it is the easiest thing is to analyze the asymptotic regime. So for example, imagine that your brain reaches the far UV of the geometry, so the largest volume region that you can access. Then what does the cosmology look like? Now, this is rather interesting because in the large volume region, essentially all the scalar field becomes a constant, the constant which is specified by whatever ADS solution with constant scalar field you have in your theory. The bulk superpotential also goes to a constant, 6 over L, where L is the ADS, asymptotic ADS length. And all these functions also go to constants. So essentially, the system becomes very simple. And the solution to the cubic equation is simply y equals constant. And this constant is determined by the values of WB and UB in the asymptotic region here. Okay? So now you can integrate it immediately. U of tau is a linear function of tau. And lo and behold, the scale factor is exponential. So in other words, if the brain reaches the asymptotic region, then the geometry on the brain is the sitter. And this cosmological, in the sitter, the cosmological constant is specified by just the value of the induced term, the induced Einstein term and induced cosmological terms. Notice that E, the value of the energy doesn't matter here. So in order, you just have to have the right amount of energy to access the asymptotic region. And once you're there, the role of the energy is essentially enters in the subleading term. So it's specified subleading term, so it's exponential, but it's not entering the kind of cosmology. Another interesting thing is that if you ever reach this UV region, then in that case, the probe approximation is always valid for reasons that I can explain you later if you ask. But so remember when I said that the if you want to use the probe approximation, that you have to do certain assumptions and you lose genericity. Well, this is true everywhere except in the far UV. In the UV of the geometry, the probe approximation holds generically without doing any assumption on the neither on the brain action nor on the bulk action. This is a very nice feature. It means that if you get there, you generically end up into a de Sitter phase. Okay? Now, of course, this de Sitter phase is eternal because this is the ultimate UV, and there's no way you can get out of it. Okay? So you can interpret it as, for example, the current de Sitter epoch, but this is not a good candidate for if you want to have inflation because you want inflation to end. But I will say something about this in a moment. What happens in the other regime? So suppose now the brain is moving in the interior of the geometry, so in the small volume region. So what happens there is more complicated. In fact, it depends on more on the details of the functions which appear, which specify the action of the model. And for example, you can ask what happens when the infrared of the geometry in the interior is also approximately ADS. In other words, the field goes to a fixed value. Then in that case, again, the answer is universal. You always end up in an FRW universe. Well, end up. The universe is always FRW, so it looks like a Big Bang cosmology with some specific value of the equation of state parameter. So W equals minus 1/9. W is the equation of state parameter. Now, this value isn't particularly interesting as far as I know, but OK, that's a fact. On the other hand, you can ask the question, what happens if the interior of the geometry is not anti de Sitter, but, for example, whether the scalar field goes to infinity. And in that case, it's convenient to parameterize the functions which appear in the action with some exponentials, with some given exponents. So there's an exponent specifying the bulk potential and a few exponents, gamma W, gamma U, and gamma Z, specifying the brain potentials. And in that case, to make the long story short, you also end up with an FRW cosmology, but depending on the values of these exponents and depending on the value of the initial energy, then you can get an equation of state parameter which is anywhere between minus 1 and 1/3. Okay? So for example, you can realize something which looks like quintessence, something that looks like inflation, something that looks like matter domination or radiation domination. And this, again, this is just from the solving the brain dynamics inside the bulk with an empty brain. Okay. Now, to just summarize what kind of cosmological histories you can have, then the simplest thing you can get are, for example, if you have a monotonic motion just from the IR to the UV, so you will get from an initial Big Bang singularity, which is characterized by some kind of equational state, then the brain will expand and will end up in a late time de Sitter universe. Or you can have the reverse. You can have a contracting de Sitter, which ends up in a big crunch. But you can have also some intermediate situations, for example, in which the brain starts contracting, the universe starts contracting, and then it reaches, what can happen is that it may reach some forbidden region, some boundary of the forbidden region, just like any classical system would do when it hits a potential barrier. Then in that case, there will be a bounce. Okay, so the brain will stop and revert its direction, and then it will start expanding again. Now, from the point of view of the four-dimensional cosmology, typically this is something that you cannot do with normal matter, normal equations of states in four dimensions. However, here, there is no problem with that, so the bounce will not have any phantoms or ghosts or instabilities or anything like that. Okay, so this would be, from the higher dimensional theory point of view, this is a completely regular bounce and predictable. So you can do that. You can also try to implement something which looks like an intermediate epoch of inflation. So suppose that, for example, you start, so this is now what? So the upper figure, the orange line is the superpotential. The red, the green line, something that looks like the inverted potential. So the infrared is this way, so you have the brain moving this way. So suppose that your brain encounters at some point some intermediate extremum of the potential, then essentially the same analysis goes through as I did for the UV region. In other words, you will have essentially a quasi de Sitter phase down here. But then if you overshoot this extremum, then this de Sitter phase will end. And then you end up again in a normal FRW cosmology. So this will be a situation in which you have a big bang in, a small, in the small volume region. Then you expand, then you have an intermediate inflation epoch, and then depending on the parameters of your model, you may or may not have enough refoldings. This is a model building question. And then, but then importantly, inflation will end and you will end up again in an FRW cosmology. So now the crucial thing here is what happens to matter. So at some point, if you do that, you will have to produce matter and radiation, and this is not included here. So for now, I didn't include any of the standard model fields in the model explicitly, but this is something that eventually one can add later. Okay, so to conclude, so I presented you a framework which is based on extra-dimensional gravity, and it provides a framework for the self-tuning of the cosmological constant, and such that gravity can be reproduced in some range of scale, and it gives interest in cosmology, which can possibly arise. But now, so this is a framework, now one has to do phenomenology, one has to do model building. So in particular, the crucial questions to answer are whether you can get acceptable values of the gravitational scales involved. In other words, M Planck, graviton mass, the transition scale. So you want to observe a good gravitational dynamics at the, in the observed range. I haven't talked about stability requirements. So if you choose the wrong action, the wrong functions in the action, then you may have ghosts. So you don't want ghosts. We have some conditions that allow you to avoid this. The graviton is massive, or, well, anyway, it's higher dimensional, so we'll have a VDVZ discontinuity problem and an associated possibly strong coupling problem at some intermediate scale. So it is important to understand how to comply with that and how to and what is the actual cutoff of the theory. And also from the phenomenological point of view, there are scalar fields. This could be light. They could mediate fifth forces. And therefore, you have to look at how to avoid these bounds. And in the cosmological setting, of course, the most interesting thing is to go beyond the probe approximation. So for example, you can try to look for exact solutions even in, with very specific ansatz, or maybe do things numerically. Another thing that seems crucial is to include brain matter. So now, for now, the brain was empty. All the cosmology was, in some sense, a mirage cosmology. It was just produced by the brain motion in the bulk. But then at some point, you want the cosmology to be dominated by the actual matter, the standard model fields that we observe. And therefore, at some point, you have to include them. And this could, in fact, also lead to interesting dissipation effects. For example, you can ask the question whether you can transfer kinetic energy in the bulk into matter production on the brain. This would be very interesting. And ultimately, what you want to do is you want to understand the self-tuning from a dynamical perspective. So in other words, you want to start with some cosmological state or some state which is far from the equilibrium solution and ask whether this can approach the equilibrium solution and whether we can see that as the end point of some evolution and not just some initial choice. So thank you very much. Thank you so much.
I was wondering how the self-tuning works in sort of operational sense. So if I add, say, a scalar field on the brain that is frozen and contributes to the cosmological constant, naively, that will be self-tuning, right?
Yes.
Now, let's say I have matter, heavy fermions or whatever, confined to the brain. That has a dust-like energy density. Is it going to?
So, if you at the moment you
partly tuned or
no? So the moment you have some non-trivial energy density, then you're looking at the cosmology, and then the question whether it's self-tuned or not, it's sort of not really the point. The question is whether you want to have.
I'd like to know, right? So if I put matter with.
No, but what I'm calling self-tuning is the vacuum state. It's just the fact that I'm not.
Okay, then I take what if I put the scalar field with a very, very W that is infinitesimally different from minus one? Is it going to be self-tuned?
So you add an additional field.
right? The rolling field, very slowly rolling field, is it going to be tuned or not?
I mean, so you want to know whether you're close, you're very close to Minkowski.
I want to know how I should approach it. Is there an ambiguous answer?
Well, yeah, there is a.
You have to...
No, there is no. There is an unambiguous answer. The question is, if you are close to a static configuration, then essentially, if you are not in a cosmological setup, then you just do what I did, and you get the.
What if W is minus 0.99? Do I have a self-tuning or not?
But depends what you call self-tuning. What do you call self-tuning?
What do you call
self-tuning? I call self-tuning a flat solution.
Right, so if instead of the stress energy that's consistent with the cosmological constant, I put any other stress energy, the system will react, right? The fire.
Sure, yes. So this is...
So what if I put pure matter on the brain?
Yes.
Without pressure? How would it get good.
So this is this point, right? So qualitatively, what will happen is that what you expect is that if you are in a regime where gravity looks four-dimensional, then you will get the same answer that you would get in four-dimensional gravity. But this we haven't, okay, look, brain matter we haven't included explicitly yet, so I cannot tell you. But if you are in a regime where your theory is essentially four-dimensional, you will get the four-dimensional answer, essentially. So...
Can I add something to this? Something that was not mentioned by Francesco, and I think it's important for the picture, is that the brain, if you go into the non-relativistic approximation, then the effective motion of the brain is described by a particle moving in a potential. And this potential, there's no matter on the brain, nothing. This potential, in fact, is a potential which has a minimum exactly at the self-tuning point. So it means that somehow, if the brain moves, and if there is dissipation, in this picture so far there is no dissipation, this might have the tendency of going really to the bottom where the effective cosmological constant is zero. Now, if you add matter, etc., with a bit of, let's say, extension of this picture, which has to be verified, you would expect that you have a brain now that also interacts with other fields. But the self-tuning potential acts really on the brain, not the rest of the matter. But of course, this has to be worked out.
Could the form of your brain be of the form of a large sphere?
That was the question I asked.
Yeah. So no, in this setup the brain is so it depends. In the static, in the vacuum, the brain is flat.
I'm just asking, can you consider this other possibility?
Yeah.
It's near flat because it's a very large sphere.
Yeah, you could have, for example, a brain in the shape of this. You can look for an ansatz in which the brain is you mean the spatial geometry or the four-dimensional? So the brain is a four-dimensional hypersurface.
Yeah.
So it could be a four sphere in the Euclidean.
Yes.
Yeah. So in that case, but in order to find such solutions, you have to you have to modify the asymptotic boundary conditions close to the ADS boundary. But yeah, such solutions do exist, and in fact, we studied them in this paper from 2018, which I mentioned. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah.